From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
I'm Andrew Rubin, host of Healthcare Connect. I'm with this in the studio with my friends and co-hosts Allison Vogel and Matt Pensner. Healthcare reform has never played a more important role in our society than it plays at this very, very moment in time, when the protections that people need because they're at risk of getting sick from COVID, you know, when they're in need of getting sick from anything and not having a job anymore because, you know, what's the number, 12, 14% of Americans are unemployed here in New York City. It's up to, I think, 20% of unemployment rates. All those people are eligible for essentially premium-free health insurance on the exchanges. And you know, there were some provisions that said, and I've already seen emails coming through Twitter on Rubin Health where people said are getting bills for COVID-related emergency services and services. But, you know, there was a provision, I believe it was a federal mandate, certainly in many states, where you couldn't actually balance bill for, you know, co-pays and for COVID care. But if you don't have insurance, you're still allowed to pay, get your, the hospitals are still allowed to bill for the care they provide. And they're still allowed to collect the money. So just because if you get a COVID test and there's no cost sharing, it doesn't mean it necessarily, if you end up in the emergency room or ICU, that you're not going to have a hospital bill. Right. They don't have, but people interpreted COVID testing provisions, emergency COVID care in an emergency room with, I'm not going to have to pay for any health care when, in fact, you do.
Exactly. That was part of the CARES Act. And that was, you know, it waived your cost sharing. But again, that was only for, and then if you're part of a self-insured plan, if your employer is self-insured, that doesn't necessarily cover you for that service. I mean, that's up to your employer to decide if they're going to waive that. Yeah. So again, a lot of employers did, but again.
And some insurers, I don't know if you heard Ali, just decide that they're no longer going to cover like antibody testing and things like that.
Oscar is one big health plan that came out and said, they announced yesterday that they're not just going to cover antibody testing for everybody.
Right.
You know, they're going to, you know, they said that they, in order for them to stay in business.
Well, I also wonder as you roll this forward, right, you know, the administration's attack pre-existing conditions, right, is now they're just going to be a blanket pre-existing condition clause. If you had COVID, like, boom, you're out or your premium goes through the roof or something like that.
I mean, well, if they win this case and, you know, and this whole thing goes away and healthcare reform goes away, then theoretically, anyone who was exposed to COVID
has a
pre-existing condition.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
I mean, it's
3 million Americans now all of a sudden have a new pre-existing condition.
So here's the thing, Matt. It's 3 million Americans we know about.
Right. That's true.
So I think we all are pretty comfortable in saying that the number is probably closer to, you know, 20, 30 million Americans.
Could be.
Because, you know, here in certain communities in New York City, they did, you know, antibody testing, which doesn't really give much clinical benefit in terms of, and I understand why Oscar's not paying for it anymore, because you can't really use it to make any decisions on anything. So it's good for epidemiological studies to know how many people in a community have it. So, but there are certain communities in New York City, in Brooklyn and Williamsburg, in that area, that apparently has like something like 50-60% herd immunity.
Wow.
But they didn't, half the people there didn't know they had it.
Right.
So when you say 3 million Americans tested positive for COVID, that's not including anyone who may have herd immunity and didn't know they had it when they had it, because they didn't have symptoms and they were spreading it even though they didn't have it and they didn't have symptoms. So, you know, when you think about, you know, it's early July and this really started for us here in New York, the center, in early March, right? March, April, May, June, 4 months. How little we knew about all this then, and how much more we know about this, and how the healthcare system's, you know, absorbing this, but how much we didn't know then, how much we know now, and how much we still don't know now is remarkable. I mean, I remember when, you know, people were saying you shouldn't wear masks, and now it's like, and we were saying it because our experts, the CDC, were saying don't wear masks; they don't do anything.
Right.
Well, guess what? You need them. They do everything.
They
like it's the frontline defense.
But isn't that funny how, you know, if you think what the next 6 weeks will hold, I mean, nobody knows, but if you go backwards 6 weeks, how much has changed, you know, in New York City or other places in the country going the other way? But 6 weeks, this virus really changes and has such an impact. So what happens 6 weeks from now in New York City? It could be gone, God willing. We could be in another spike.
Well, you know, we've done such a good job here in New York. I am and I've been, as you guys know, an optimist all along. I've been a realist too. Mm-hmm. Remember when we were at the height and the worst, I warned everybody that the death rate follows. So, you know, we're going to see a plateau of new cases plateau, and then we're going to see a drop, but then we're going to see deaths shoot up because they lag by about a month. And so don't be alarmed by the progress we're making when you hear about all the people who are about to die. And lo and behold, you remember those calls, those update calls. And that's exactly what happened. And that's exactly what's going to happen down south in the the southern tier states.
And they're all touting that.
Where the death rate has remained relatively low so far, but the COVID cases are spiking and the intensive care units are starting to fill up. Those deaths are going to start climbing. So, you know, wearing these masks and getting ahead of it is so important. But then you have to remind everybody that the deaths will follow even if the new cases are going down. And because it's a hard concept to put your hands around. Why are we wearing a mask? Why is everybody forcing me to wear a mask when everybody's still getting sick and dying? It actually doesn't work that way. We have shown that you flatten the curve and then go down the mountain, as Governor Cuomo would say, and yet the deaths lag way behind. But wearing that mask is so, so important for everybody.
You know, in my town, there was an outdoor graduation party of sorts, and oops.
You guys made the news.
We made the news, right? There was a huge spike because people were, even though they were outside, they weren't wearing their masks, they weren't social distancing. In my town, boom, overnight had, 25 new cases.
Exactly. Right. And so that's why you got to contact tracing and quarantining. Guess what? They controlled that outbreak.
We did. Yes. They did.
And that's how you get ahead of this.
That's right.
And believe me, I haven't eaten in a restaurant indoors in New York, my home, in 4 months.
And that kills you.
And it kills me. It kills me. And it's so important to our economy and so many people who work in restaurants.
Right.
But we can't do it safely yet. We just can't.
Yeah.
I know.
What also kind of freaks me out, and, Matt and I have had this conversation, is outside of COVID, is, 6 months from now, all of the people who are delaying having preventative screenings, stuff, the things that people would have caught, whether it's mammographies or prostate cancer.
There was a 50% increase in calls for heart attacks by the FDNY, the fire department in the city, for the city of New York, because people were not going to the hospital, not going to doctors, and and these people died.
Yeah.
They're not counted in the COVID statistics.
Exactly. But I think, the breast cancer, all these other things that are going to come to fruition, come January, next February, all these people that, so sad, I think we're going to have, something horrible is going to come to fruition.
And take that comment and bring it back to our usual show, about health insurance. So you'll see, specifically in New York, and I'm sure other states, the same things are happening. In New York, insurance companies have to apply for their rate increases every year and has to get approved. Most insurance companies applied for usual, if not larger, increases here in New York. And the reasoning is exactly what Ali's saying. They're all sitting around saying, we think there's going to be a huge surge in high-intensity care in the coming months because people delayed care, so we need to increase premiums to protect costs.
Nobody went to the doctor for the last couple months. People sat home. Yeah, they were doing some kind of telemedicine visits. There were some people doing that, but really, for the last few months, at least in our market, in this area, a lot of people sat home. No one was going to the doctor. They were trying. Everyone was very freaked out, and no one was getting care,
You got to go back and get those things.
Yeah.
But
New York, they put on commercials by Greater New York Hospital Association, non-hospital specific, telling people the importance of getting your health care. And when you walk into our hospital today, as an example, it's the safest it's ever actually been to get health care.
But I have friends, and they were like, oh, my God, I would never go to the doctor's office. I was saying, you have to go.
I actually think
it's
the doctor's
so
safer than going to, the supermarket.
We have never been cleaner.
I was telling everyone, I'm like, that's probably cleaner than going to the grocery store.
It is. Our doctor offices are immaculate. Yeah. Our employees are wearing masks and face shields. We require them to wear face shields. Our doctors wearing face shields.
And everybody's getting temperature checked and symptom checked before they go in.
We screen everybody because we can here in the Northeast for COVID before they come back. We're going to screen them again next month. We're doing, routine screening of all of our healthcare employees. We're doing this right. All right. As we probably all can around the country, we could just sit here for the next 2 hours catching up about our COVID stories. All right, let's go to the phones, and we're going to start with Clara from North Carolina is next. Hey, what's up, Claire?
So I hit my deductible in February with the surgery. I need a follow-up surgery that got delayed until August. Fine. my fear is if it gets delayed again into next year, do I have to start my deductible all over again?
Yes, but why is it being delayed?
Well, I don't know that the second one, that this, first of all, was delayed because they canceled all surgery.
Right, right.
So now it's opened up again, but North Carolina numbers are going up. So I hope this doesn't happen, but it's
what kind of, I'm probing a little bit, but there's a reason. What kind of,
okay. So it's breast cancer reconstruction surgery.
Okay. And what's your insurance?
I'm on the, Obamacare plan. So it's
So I was going to say, if you have a commercial plan, just drive north to, you know, Virginia or some, yeah, but you can't go out of state. So it was pushed to, you said, to August?
Right. It was supposed to be March, and now it's August.
And it's scheduled now?
It all happened. It's scheduled now, which was my big goal, was to just get it on the books. I figured that might help my cause.
And the reason it's in August now is the doctor's just catching up, and he's that busy? Or she's that busy?
Exactly. Yep.
I know the cases are probably going up, but you have a really good governor. I'm hoping that I don't see any red flags for you right now, where they would delay this based on what I'm seeing coming out of, you know, the various states about COVID cases. Your ICUs aren't at dangerous levels. If you start hearing on the local news, or I start hearing on the local news, that North Carolina is turning into a cluster state, a crisis state, then you got to get on the phone with that doctor of yours and beg them to squeeze you in. Well, here's what I do know. Hospitals, governors, states, they're going to be very reluctant to do what happened in the beginning, which was shutting down elective surgery. And what's interesting is a case like yours really is borderline elective. Reconstructive breast surgery post-cancer, one could make a compelling case because it's subjective. There's not a list of cases that say what is elective and what is critical. One can make the case that since it's been delayed once already, the need for you to have reconstructive surgery is not really elective. If the patient, because the definition is technically, if the patient and surgeon believe it's important and needs to be done, then it's not elective. Given it's post-breast cancer reconstructive surgery, the mental effect this has on you by delaying it again, the economic impact, all those factors can make this an essential case to have the surgery. Allison may know, maybe, and maybe Claire, you know, do you stay overnight for the surgery, or is this the same day procedure?
No, it's just a day. Yeah. It's the same day.
Yes, you would. If it got delayed, to answer your question, you'd have to go start a new deductible. And there's no way you're going to get that to change. I mean, it would be a bureaucracy that would be impossible. I also don't believe that the governor is going to want to shut down elective surgery in the state because it's so catastrophic to the healthcare system. You know, it's what happened here in the Northeast. It costs billions upon billions of dollars to the healthcare system and lost revenue that is you can never catch up, which is why we had to have government funding to keep our doors open, because the profit margins of hospitals, even big hospitals like ours that are blessed to make money every year, most don't. But even in a place like ours where we make money, our profit margins are so small that any disruption in our ability to generate revenue could wipe us out. It's that fragile of a healthcare system in this country. So they're not going to want to cancel elective surgery unless it's really so catastrophically bad that it actually could break the hospital or break the patient's back by doing the surgery. So I don't think North Carolina is in that place based on what I'm seeing. But if that were to change, and as we know with this crazy virus, it can change, then I would get on the phone with your doctor and beg as much as you can to get that case scheduled right away. It's in the hospital will squeeze it in because they want to make the money too. You know, they're trying to catch up also when things got canceled. So, you know, I don't think you're in any trouble yet, but I would push really hard on this. I think it's important to push really hard on this.
Oh, and I have to get the one in August. I had to push really hard. Because
you had to push hard.
Yeah, absolutely. The order. Oh yeah. They lost the order in the shutdown. You know, so when I called up, I wasn't even like on the list.
All right. Well, I'm glad. When in August is it?
Get an operating room.
When is it? Stay on top of it. You're 3 weeks away, basically. I think you're going to be okay. I think that if, God forbid, this happened, you know, where you sensed that it was getting bad, You know, remember the conversation I said about elective, your case passed the elective stage in my mind. And if your doctor wanted to send me a message through Twitter, I'd be happy to explain to them why the definition of elective is so important here as a breast cancer survivor. So, I actually think you'll be okay.
Yeah, she only does cancer patients, so she's trying to get all her cancer patients.
Yeah, and she more than anyone would know, elective doesn't mean life or death. Elective means what is the impact to the patient. Reconstructive breast surgery is really important to patients, and to delay it once, you can make the case it's not catastrophic, but to do that to someone mentally who's, you know, recovered from breast cancer is. So I think that this would be done even if the hospital were under strain. And if you're not occupying a bed, it's safe. And I want to tell you something else. Allison and I, Matt, were talking about this at the beginning of the show. Even during the COVID pandemic, when our hospital had COVID cases, the hospital was still safe. I was here every day. And I never felt unsafe. The hospital was clean. Our employees had personal protective equipment. You know, we were really careful. Our patients were segregated. We were doing, you know, people had emergency surgery. There were cases that were deemed important that had to be done. And we did them all, and not a single person got COVID. So well-run hospitals can segregate the patients, maintain a sterile environment for patients so that they don't get exposed. Hospitals then and now were very safe places to be. So you're a person who doesn't want to delay their care, but for everyone else who's listening, don't wait because you think it's going to be better next year. I would argue that now, with the focus on COVID prevention in the healthcare system, it's the safest time to get medical care because we are so focused on this. And you know, once the vaccine comes out, and I'm praying it's in the, you know, I know everybody's saying early next year. I'm one of the people who are thinking late this year. People are going to let their guard down, you know, on prevention. And you know, there's a lot of people are saying flu season in the Northeast is going to be so minimal because we're all wearing masks and we're all social distancing and we're all taking the precautions. Down south, it could be a totally different situation. So stay on top of this, Claire. And if you get stuck, just reach out, okay?
Thank you so much, y'all. Stay safe and have a good day.
You too, Claire. Good luck with the surgery and stay safe. Okay, Robert from South Carolina is next. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Good. One thing, I really appreciate your show and how informative you are. I've really learned a lot about it. I'll be 65 in a year and hopefully retired by then. So I've learned so much about Medicare, prepare myself for that. But
that's
a different story.
Where in South Carolina are you?
Spartanburg area, Greenville area.
Yep. Nice, very nice.
I have a 27-year-old son who lost his job due to COVID-19 in April. He tried to go on the exchange a few weeks ago, and it kicked him out because it said that he did not lose his job between something like May the 2nd and sometime in July. And he called them the next day to find out why, and they said that he would have to, well, it said, it kicked him out and said he was going to have to wait until the open enrollment period. And when he called the next day to ask them about it, they said that since he had already applied, that he was going to have to appeal now. So
what was the date he lost his job?
See, I don't. That's the date. I don't exactly know.
Yeah. So that this is very black and white, right? It's very black and white.
I'm pretty sure it was early April, and he kept insurance for a couple of weeks. So I'm guessing maybe mid-April when he lost his insurance.
Right. So it's going to be really close, right? It's about when he lost his job, right? And if the days that you're saying are right, it could be he missed it by a couple days or he was under the wire by a couple days, but it is 60 days from his termination date, right?
Right.
So
in the last call, that's when I thought.
Right. So if it was mid-April, he had until roughly mid-June, right? So yep. And again, it is black and white. I don't think the system would make a mistake on this. It could. And if it did, it's a very easy appeal, right? He shows the letter from his company that says, this is your last day of employment. He shows when he logged onto the system and submitted his application. If it's less than or equal to 60, he gets insurance. If it isn't, he has to wait until open enrollment, which starts at the end of this year and would be effective, January 1st of 21.
Okay. Well, compound situations right after he lost insurance. He was in a car wreck that was the other party's fault. But
that shouldn't be insurance. That should be his auto insurance.
That's
though.
Right. That wouldn't be health insurance.
No. I'm just saying right now he has no job and he had no insurance. So we're having to pay his medical bills until all this is settled because the other auto policy is not going to pay until all this is settled. He's had to have knee surgery and everything else.
So you mean you're paying now while you have to go through the claim with the other driver to figure out who really was at fault and things like that.
The officer's already said that the other party was at fault.
Yeah.
But until he's through surgery and they find out how he comes out,
right.
That and the other.
Yeah, so you're going to outlay the money now and then, you know, get it back on the back end after everything's done.
Except the $30,000 hospital bill, which you applied for financial aid on.
So on that,
the other problem.
Hey, listen, on the hospital bill, this is important. On the hospital bill, he needs to ask for the self-pay discount because if it's a $30,000 hospital bill, that means they're billing him the hospital charges. And when someone is paying charges because they don't have insurance, as I'm sure you've heard over the years on this show, you're paying more than what somebody who has insurance gets when the hospital gets paid. So if I have, for example, have a hospital bill and I have United Healthcare and the charges are $30,000, United is my insurance company, it's very possible United would only pay $8,000 of that hospital bill. So many hospitals around the country, because as you know, we inflate our charges. It's a weird system. We can talk about it another time. But many hospitals around the country have what they call a self-pay discount, which means they will extend the discount that they give to an insurance company to someone who's paying out of pocket. Now, not all do, but many do. So if you have a $30,000 hospital bill, I would try and get that bill down to $15,000 or at least ask them what is the self-pay discount so that you could get a low, even if the auto insurance company is going to pay it, at least you won't have to lay out that kind of cash because that's a lot of money to have to lay out, all right?
I've already sent the bill, and it was $33,000, and their self-pay was $26,000, which I thought was still kind of high. Cause,
it is high. You know,
the self-pay was greatly reduced, and he had to have a knee brace. It was greatly reduced.
I would go back again, but, I mean, here's the irony. You'll get reimbursed by the insurance company, and then the insurance company will negotiate. They're not going to pay that to the hospital. They'll negotiate it down on your behalf. So just as long as you can handle that's a lot of money to have to pay. So if you have the cash, great, because the auto insurance will cover it. But if not, at least you know that you'll get it reimbursed. So if you have the money, that's great.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Doctor Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Doctor Radio.